We have spent the first two class periods taking our time introducing the book, and we covered a lot of items that are in Lesson 1 that's in the folder. And tonight we actually get to the text. The first two chapters, as well as the latter half of chapter 42, are the only narrative sections in the book. The rest of it are speeches, and so we'll get to all that. But this is probably the easiest of the material in the book of Job, or chapters 1 and chapter 2, and then that part of chapter 42. So we'll, and like I've been saying, we have plenty of time to cover the text with 21 lessons left to go, so we're not going to be in any hurry. We'll give it adequate treatment. Okay, let's begin with prayer. I'm going to ask Trevor Bowen, if he would, to lead us in a word of prayer before our class begins. As I've been saying, I don't want this to be lectured, and I did not share with you my personal philosophy as to why I do material the way that I do it. It's been my understanding since I've been preaching for the last 10 or so years that nobody's notes means more to you than your own. When you're studying a book, you'll jot these things down and come to your mind because they're meaningful to you. And so my hope and my goal is, I said, I'm not going to go through and say, all right, somebody answer question one and then question two. We're not going to do it that way. But I've given you plenty of opportunity and plenty of room to write down whatever notes you'd like beforehand, and then as well as in class, as we talk about these things, I encourage you to jot these things down. And then when we get through with Job, the Lord willing, what you'll have is your own commentary, that you've written these things down and they're meaningful to you in your studies. That's how I do my class material. I've got a whole drawer full of folders in my office that mean more to me than any book I've ever bought, because that's my studies. That's what I've done as I've gone through the text. So hopefully that's how you use it as well. And we want to discuss. We don't want this to be lecture. Okay, real quickly. Now, we looked at Sunday. Purpose for the book, disprove incorrect religious theories. We'll talk about that. Remind us of God's higher purpose. Job had to find that out. God's ways are always higher, and he was benefited by having gone through what he did, and to show us the benefit of faith that is tried or tested. And we talk about all that on Sunday. Again, the theme of the book is chapter 42, verse 5. I have heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. Job finally understood, and he would not have understood if he had not gone through the ordeal that were in his life. The short outline we showed you, we're looking at the prologue tonight, starting the first two chapters, the introduction. And here are some points that Mr. Baxter gives us in his book that I showed you. Those are five sub-points there. And so we'll cover that as we get through lesson number two. Okay, let's start now with the prologue. And let's talk first about Job and his character and his calamities. And we'll first discuss his character, description of the man. Verses 1 through 5 of Job chapter 1. Rob, would you read verses 1 through 5 for us, please?
So it was on the days of feasting at 1 or 4, Job would send and sanctify them. He would rise early.
Okay. Where was Uz? Anybody know where Uz was? Not much known about Uz. We have some passages in the Bible, and what I want to emphasize is Lamentations chapter 4 and verse 21. In Jeremiah's Lamentations, there seems to be some connection. I don't know how directly correlated it is, but there may be some connection with Edom, as that passage would state. We don't have to know where Uz was particularly to understand the book, but we kind of get an idea. And the verses I listed there for you, Genesis 10, chapter 22, chapter 36, then Jeremiah's prophecy, as well as the one there in Lamentations. Most of those passages deal with men who were named Uz rather than a place. But as I said, Lamentations 4:21 gives us maybe an indication that it was somehow connected to or related somehow with Edom. But now let's talk about his character. These verses describe his character. And it's stated, his stated character, stellar. Now, I've asked you there in question two, virtues of Job's character. And I thought maybe we could talk about what you think those words, what they each meant. There were four statements that were given. Let's take them in order. What was the first one listed? Blameless or perfect, some versions say. Now, that, of course, it can't mean what? Can't mean perfect. Well, in what sense, Al? That's right. He wasn't sinless. It doesn't mean that. But when we look at the word perfect, Noah was perfect, it says in Genesis, blameless. That means what? If it doesn't mean sinless, then what can it mean? Or what should it mean? All right. He was blameless in that he was whole morally. He was a whole moral, and that's W-H-O-L-E, a whole moral man. He was a man of integrity. And our elder studies we're doing on Friday nights, we've been looking at the qualities of the characteristics of a man who would be a bishop or a shepherd, and one of them is blameless. That's what that means. He is beyond reproach. People can say things about you, and people often do, but we live our lives such to the extent that those things that are said about us, they won't stick because they're not true. That's not the kind of people that we are. So he was a blameless man. All right. Second, what's mentioned about Job? He was upright. What does that mean? And some of these may overlap some. Okay. That's a good one. He didn't have nothing to hide. All right. Are there other words besides upright in translations you may be using? Do they all say upright? I didn't check that out. So he was upright. He was committed to the standards of God. That's what God wants me to do, and that's what I'm going to try to. That's how I'm going to try to conduct and behave myself. So he was a blameless man. He was upright. Thirdly, what's mentioned about him? He feared God. Now that's almost self-explanatory. Feared God. He had reverence for his Creator. He revered the God of heaven. And then finally, it says in verse 1, at the end of verse 1, another self-explanatory. It says what? He did what? Shunned or turned away from evil. He made it his practice. He kept himself from anything that was prohibited by God. Some of Dennis's recent preaching, that's exactly what he was talking about. We need to shun evil. Shun those things that are sinful, that we not get involved in those things that are in our lives. So that's Job's character as it was stated. That's how the Bible describes him. Pretty good man, isn't it? That's a good man. Which we'd all be characterized that way. Make it our goal to do that. All right, now let's talk about his prosperity. We've seen his character. Now, what about his prosperousness or his prosperity? How greatly blessed was he? Look at some of the things listed there in verses 2 and verse 3. All right, and if we are correct in saying that the dating of the book of Job was in the days of patriarchs, what was one of the gauges of a prosperous man back in that day? Large family. A lot of children. Yes, Harold. Right. Absolutely. There's pretty good sized flocks and herds. And you couldn't graze that many animals on out in the wilderness. That's a good point. So he had large children. Then what about his possessions? Pretty good size. What all the particularly what's mentioned is 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys. That's a lot of animals. So his possessions. He had many children, and he had large flocks and herds. And then next listed is he had a multitude of servants. He had to have the help to take care of all that bounty. I mean, he was blessed. But look at the last phrase in verse 3. How was he summarily described? The greatest of all the men in the East. Nobody greater than Job. Possession-wise, he was known as a wealthy man, as a blessed man. And that's how he was known. So of all the men in the ancient East, when you said the name Job, do you think people knew who you're talking about? I would say so. They would know who Job was. Okay. Now, later on in the chapter, and we're not going to get to it per se right now to describe it, but later on in verse 21, I think it would be good to remind ourselves how Job viewed his blessings that we're talking about now. When they get taken away, as we'll discuss in a few moments, what was it that he said? The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. So he didn't. I don't get the idea that Job was a materialist. I don't. That doesn't fit with this man. He fully understood that he was blessed by God. God gave him that, and he was thankful for it and praised God for it. Even especially when he lost it, he still praised God for that. He didn't become bitter about that. So that's Job's prosperity. He was blessed greatly as a servant of God. Now, we've seen his character stated. Let's look at his character as it is in action, how he shows himself, not just how he was described by the Bible, but here's what he did. Steadfast character. And for this we want verses, this is question 4 if you're following along in your outline. This is verses 4 through 5. How did Job show or display or manifest his character? All right. Particularly with respect to his children. What did he do regarding his children? All right, Tom, he made sacrifices. Now, why would he do such a thing? All right. All right. You read the forest, Rob. Your version said what again in verse 4? Just that phrase. Is it verse 4 or verse 5? Is it verse 5? Okay, I wasn't in front of my Bible. Okay, maybe. Other versions say what? Mine says perhaps. Just in case. Now, Job wasn't with them, so he didn't know what was going on. But that shows us he was still concerned as their father, wasn't he? Yes, Wayne? Yes, absolutely. So, again, this reminds us that this his function or his actions in terms of sacrificing reminds us that the patriarchs occupied what position back in that day and time? They were priests. So this is another indication that this, more than likely, at least it is to me, this was in the days of the ancient patriarchs, where the patriarch carried out the duties, if you will, of the priest sacrificing for those in his family. So Job was concerned about his children, spiritual, standing before God. And perhaps, he said, just in case, I'm not going to take the chance. If they've done something wrong, I'm still concerned about them. You get the idea that these were grown children? I mean, obviously they were maybe living outside his home. Can't prove that either, but it seems to be. To me it is. And he's still. Okay, all right. From house to house. So he still shows a concern as a father. My kids are already grown, but I'm still concerned about them. And he's showing his piety. Yes, Perry. Yes. Yes. Yes, he was. That's correct. That is correct. That's correct. And that's what Wayne said a moment ago also. Now, two phrases I want to emphasize, and these are in verse 5. When would Job do this? Huh? First one says what? I got to get up and do that. Are you a like to be an early riser? There's that alarm. I got to get up again. The Bible says he rose early and did it. That's how concerned he was. And the second emphasis is, thus Job did regularly, or some versions say, thus Job did continually. It wasn't an off again, on again thing, but this was regular. This man was concerned all the time about his children, about his family. So this is his character in action. And I would suggest to us that his actions certainly match his stated character that was mentioned earlier in the chapter. This is a man through and through that is spiritual to the very core, about himself and about his family. Okay, anything through now the first four questions? Job's character. This is a man we're talking about in this book. It's a good man. All right, now let's talk about his calamities. The delivery, or the coming of the first one. And now we're going to read verses 6 through 12, please. Verses 6 through 12. Wayne, read for us Job 1, 6 through 12, please. As we emphasized in our introduction, and we're going to keep emphasizing it through at least the first section of the book, Job's not aware of this. This is unbeknownst to him. This was going on in that spiritual realm. We're going to call this a divine summons. All right, now this, Job didn't see this. The sons of God, I'm convinced, are angels. There is a text of Scripture, namely Genesis chapter 6 and verse 2, where you have the phrase, the sons of God and the sons of men began to intermarry. That would not be angels there. Angels don't marry men. I think that would be righteous men and unrighteous men. So context would always dictate as to what you're talking about. But I believe this is talking about angels. And I've listed there 1 Kings 22. That's a text that deals with Micaiah the prophet, and he had a vision. And it's similar to this somewhat in that the sons of God were summoned to the throne of God for purposes that were stated in that text. Also, later in Job, if you're making notes, chapter 38, verse 7, you have another instance where it's mentioned the sons of God. That would seem to indicate it's talking about spiritual servants, angelic servants, that serve at the pleasure of God around His throne. And when God summons them to do His bidding in one matter or another, then that's what they do. So, This seems to me that's what's going on here. But as God issues this summons, this divine summons, angels have to report, but who else is there? Satan is there. So, they apparently are summoned at the will of God to appear before Him for purposes unknown to man, and included is Satan. He still must answer this summons. Of course, Satan didn't come there to receive a work order, did he? What was he there to do? Cause trouble. Zechariah 3 and other passages that we can find in the Bible says Satan is our accuser or our adversary. He's there to slander. And that's precisely what he did on this occasion. So he's there now. So God has issued this summons and the servants are there. And Satan is there also. And First one to speak is God, and he asks Satan what? First question, where have you been? Now, that doesn't mean God doesn't know, because we know that God's omniscient. But he asked Satan, where have you been? And Satan's answer was what? Oh, I've been here and there. Yes, been busy. Okay. Roaming about on the earth. Now, what other passages in the Bible talk about the activities of Satan in the sense of being busy, as Tom suggests, or walking about here and there? All right. 1 Peter 5, verse 8 certainly comes to mind. He's a roaring lion, prowling about, walking about, seeking whom he may devour. So that certainly harmonizes with what Satan says here. It seems to me those would go hand in hand. So Satan's answer to God's question harmonizes with his earthly activities per se mentioned in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. And after they have that little conversation, then what does God say to him, Brother Bill? Now, with respect to all these men that you've been out walking around, have you considered my servant right here? Have you considered Job? Something Wayne said when we were going through our introduction. This is a great commendation. He didn't say, have you considered Job? Or have you considered him? Have you considered my servant, Job? Imagine being called, hearing God say, that's my servant. And he'd be pointing at you. Wouldn't that be a great thing to hear? Well done, thou good and faithful servant, enter into the joys of thy Lord. My servant. So, God confidently puts forth Job, does he not? As he's holding him up to Satan's scrutiny. Satan's been walking about, seeking whom he may devour. And do you think that God lacks any confidence in Job when he puts him up before Satan? Doesn't appear to lack any confidence. Here's my servant. If God had any reservations about whether or not Job could undergo this, you think he'd have put him up there before Satan? I don't think he would. Now let's not forget, and we're going to stress that, throughout this whole ordeal, do you think throughout the book that Job ever lost his confidence? I mean, within himself in terms of how he saw things. I believe he did. He lost his confidence. What about Job's wife? Did she lose her confidence in him? Absolutely. Did God ever lose confidence in Job? Never did. God always had confidence in him. Now, Job didn't know that. But God certainly knew what Job could do. Yes, Bill. Maybe so. Yes, maybe so. That's entirely possible. Yes. He'd been thinking about it. And they had this dialogue then. So God in confidence puts Job forth. And again, notice God's commendation. My servant. So after God puts him up, Satan can't stand to let that go. He's got to slander that. And he doesn't say, well, yeah, he's a pretty good fellow. How does Satan begin to attack this commendation? He's bought and paid for. In fact, the verse says you put a hedge around him. Of course he's going to be faithful. He can't help but be faithful. You've got him boxed in like that, and he's got to be faithful to you. You paid for him. He's bought and paid for him. So, the first challenge. Now here's the commendation, and Satan is now beginning the slander. So let's look at the challenge now. Verse 9. Here's the question. Remember, we went through these two questions in the introduction. Can man trust God, and can God trust man? That's what's at work here. Can God trust man to serve him out of the right motivation? Satan's slandering, saying, well, that's not why Job is faithful to you. You've blessed him greatly, and so that's why he's going to serve you faithfully, because you've given him all that stuff. And of course, the other question is, can man trust God? When he can't see the reason for his suffering, will he still trust him? Will he still have faith in God and not abandon that faith and become bitter about the adversity that's come in his life? So here's the slander. Yes?
Something about this
That is correct.
No.
Okay. So, the first challenge. Satan insults man by an implied accusation. Here's the accusation. Job is faithful only because God has paid him or hedged him in. And then here's the offer, if you will. Now in that's through verses 9 and 10. Verse 11, Satan says, I'll tell you what, God, let's do it this way. So what does he ask or offer or ask or request God to do? Not his body. Touch him. Touch what he's got. Take away what I know. And this, of course, I'm being Satan here for the moment. Take away what I know has got him so close to you, and I guarantee you he'll curse you to your face. I know he will do it. So that's Satan's offer. If put forth thy hand, the one in whom thou hast placed this great confidence, and he will curse thee to thy face. Well, we'll just really get to the bottom of this, God, and I'll show you what kind of man he is. Well, in verse 12, you have the divine response. And by the way, we've left page 4 now. We're on top of page 5, if you're following along. But the response now is what? All right. God grants Satan power over him, but as we're always wanting to make sure we remember and understand, what kind of power does Satan have? He is limited. What's the limitation here when God says all that he has? When he says all that he has is in your hand, how much did God exempt from that? In terms of his possessions, how much did God exempt of his possessions? None of it. That's right. It was all subject to Satan. But the limitation was what? God said, you cannot touch him. You can't touch him now. You leave him alone. Did Satan have to obey that? Because God is who he is and Satan is who he is. He can't fight against that. So all that he has is in your hand. Reading now from verse 12. Only do not put forth your hand on him or his person. Yes, Al. All right. Very good. 1 Corinthians 10:13. What did we read there about temptation and limits, if you will? And God will not allow what? Beyond what you're able. And God knows that. Do we know that? Not always. Not always. But God always knows that. And being in control, as Alex reminded us, He will, through His providence and through His omniscience, He will see to it that we will not be overcome or overwhelmed by that which we cannot bear. And here might be an example of this. You cannot touch Him. You only can have what He has been blessed with. Materially with. And we allow him to. But in the overall sense, you're right. If God hasn't willed it, Satan can't do it. Yes, Michael. Well, all right. That certainly falls under God's omniscience. That is correct. So here we have the discussion. Okay, here's what's happened behind the scenes. Again, Job doesn't know this. His family doesn't know it. The servants don't know it. And it says at the end of verse 12, then Satan departed from the presence of the Lord, and he's off on his mission now. Okay? So here is the... So all this Job didn't see. This is the origin of this. Job didn't see any of this. Now, Job did see some things about it. There's a limitation. Job could not touch, or Satan could not touch Job personally. Now, here's the onslaught. Here's what Job does see. Let's read now verses 13. And it says through verse 22. Let's just go through verse 19. 13 to 19. Mike, Brian, please read Job 1, 13 and 19 for us, please. All right. Job lost all that he had. He lost his family. He lost his wealth, his possessions, his servants. And in those verses that Mike just read, what is it that particularly catches your attention? Not just the fact that Job lost those things, but what is it as you consider verses 13 to 19, those seven verses, what is it that you see the most? That's it, buddy. To me, that is it. Where in all this could Job catch his breath? Where could he? Three times you see in the text, 16, 17, and 18, the phrase, while he was still speaking, here comes another one. While he still spake, here comes another one. Here comes another one. Here comes another one. And what's the last one that happened? His children. Forget the camels, forget the oxen, forget the servants. They were people, but they're not my children. But my children too. How in the world could Job have endured all that? I'll tell you what. That had to have been rough. Well, the ratings of the Chaldeans and Sabaeans was commonplace in that day and time. When it says in verse 16, the fire of God fell from heaven. That's how he saw it. Now, that doesn't mean that. I mean, yeah, it could have been a lot of things. We don't have to sit here and try to parse out exactly what all these things were. But the point to be emphasized, I believe, is that you know, Job couldn't catch his breath in all this. It just would have been impossible. And I guess I'm just asking you to think about your own life. Well, let me ask it this way. Has anybody here ever suffered like Job did? If you have, raise your hand. I don't think any of us have. Now, we may think, I've had it pretty rough, and I'm not going to sit here and be in judgment of anybody. That's not our purpose. But look at how much this man suffered just in a short, brief period of time. Wonder if we could put a stop clock or a stopwatch on this from verses 13 and 19, how long that took to happen. I mean, just bam. One after another. Couldn't catch his breath. And no doubt Satan thought, if we do it this way, I won't just get him, I'll overwhelm him. I'll cause it to happen in such a fury that he won't be able to help but curse God. That'll just be the natural thing to do. And that's what I'm going to do, and that's what he did. So that, I'm like Buddy. To me, that is the most astounding thing to think about in these six verses, is the rapidity, the rapid succession of events, one after another. He had no time to absorb each one before here came the next one. And here came the next one. And sometimes life will dish out things on us that way, won't it? I mean, it will. It will. And it makes it a little tough. So, this is the onslaught. Now look at Job's response. Verses 20 through the end of the chapter. Then Job arose, he tore his robe, shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. What kind of a man does it take to do that? Well, okay. David was a good character too. Can you be a shallow man and respond that way? It's not possible. You see people in our culture nowadays that have as much depth as a piece of paper. I mean, they're just as flat and just as shallow. They have no character. They've not grounded themselves on anything moral, anything that has connections to truth, and just the slightest puff of wind. Ephesians 4 says we are children tossed here and there by every wind of doctrine. Next time you're driving down the highway and you see trash on the highway, as your car blows by that bag or that piece of paper, what happens? It just... Then the next car blows it back the other way. It's just getting blown from side to side. And people are that way. Because they have no depth of character. But I'll tell you, Job's not shallow. He's not flat. Job had character. Yes, you. And he meant that, didn't he? And now we're seeing just the kind of man Job is. So Satan was so confident. I know what he's going to do. But who was equally, yea, even more confident than Satan? God was more confident in how he would respond. So here's the response. All right. Normally, or naturally, he grieved. Who wouldn't? That's the natural thing to do. Tore his robe, shaved his head. Back in that day and time, those were just natural signs of mourning and grief. So naturally, he did that. I thought it improper to do that. And he also, thankfully, then it says he worshipped. Now, would it have been easy to grieve? Would it have been easy to worship? Not hardly. It'd be tough. It's doable. Yes, but it wouldn't be as easy to worship as it would be to grieve. Yes, one. Yes, that is correct. Very good point. Did everybody hear that? Speak up again. Say that louder. That's such a good point. Say it again. I agree with that. Totally. So, yes, he grieved. Faithfully he worshipped. Appropriately. He acknowledged the source of these blessings. He confessed it, he admitted it, he acknowledged it. They come from God. Any blessings that any of us have are ours only at the pleasure of God. God can give them, but guess what else can happen? He can take them away. And is that unfair? That is not unfair. That's not unfair. One last point, and then we'll stop here. Predictably, as God had said, not as Satan had said, but as God had said, what did he refuse to do? He's not going to sin. He's not going to blame God. He's not going to curse God as Satan said that he would. And so that was Job's response. Through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. And this proved Satan to be a liar. Satan said he would. Yes. John 8, verse 44, Satan is a liar and the father of all liars because there's no truth in him. So round one is over. And Satan lost. Okay. We'll start here, then, Lord willing, on Sunday with question 7 on page 5 and chapter 2. Thank you for your good comments tonight. No, he doesn't give up, and we'll make that point Sunday. You're right.